Hi, and Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief, coming to you from a very dark and rainy Vancouver day just before the holidays. But I'm going to speak today with a colleague from the other side of the world, Rita Partanen, who is director of the Harvey Bay site, the Rural Clinical School at the University of Queensland School of Medicine, and has also become the acting head of the Rural Clinical School. She and her colleagues have a paper coming out in the February 2016 issue of Medical Education titled, Is 3 a Crowd? Impact of Medical Student Presence in the General Practice Consultation. Rita, I know it's a very busy time there in Australia this time of year, but glad we could find the time to chat.
Yeah, and thank you for the invitation to have the chat.
Yeah, so as part of the Rural Clinical School, the topic is somewhat self-evident in terms of why you might be interested in it. I suspect that this is something that you're constantly grappling with, clinicians who might worry about the impact of taking on students in their consultation, but maybe I'll just ask you, is there anything specific that made this a high priority for you?
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right. We have a great cohort of GPs who are involved in teaching our medical students, but then there are another group of GPs, I suppose, who have had some reservations and often have cited that adds to their work pressures and makes consultations longer, and they just feel that the negatives outweigh the positives, particularly in rural and regional Queensland and Australia, is where there is still an undersupply of general practitioners. We didn't want to overburden our GPs in these areas, but at the same time, if the evidence showed that was not the case, we wanted to be able to show our GPs, or more of our GPs, that having students is not necessarily a negative impact on their ability to do their job, but also for the patient. So that's kind of where this idea came from, and particularly to make it obviously in rural and regional areas.
Well, and there has been work done on this topic before, and some of the stuff that comes to mind for me came from Australia. And so what was it about that literature that didn't quite address the issue for you and made you feel like you had to do an additional study?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. We wanted to have the opinion of all three participants in the consultation. I think that's something that hasn't been done before. So we wanted to hear from all the participants, so the GP, the patient and the student. So that was a new kind of concept. But also some of the evidence from the studies, which as you say have mostly been from Australia, haven't always looked at all those different factors of satisfaction and time at the same time. And whilst they have shown that patients are generally supportive of having medical students in their consultations, we wanted to also have a control group comparing with the student present and without the student present to see if there's actually a difference in that satisfaction rate. And I think that's where our study is a little bit different to some of the previous studies. There's only been a couple of studies that have really involved a control group. So that's where we sort of set ourselves a bit apart.
That triangulation, so to speak, that you're describing seems quite attractive, and that I would imagine it's plausible that time and satisfaction, for example, might contradict one another in terms of people perhaps being more satisfied with their consultation if they were given more time, or having to take more time getting in the way of other things that the GP has to do. Did you have any strong hypotheses as to how these things might interact with one another before you collected your data?
I guess being a GP myself and having had students in my practice for many years as well, from my own personal experience, I thought that patients seemed to be satisfied and that the students really didn't impact significantly on lengthening time, which was often the concerns from other GPs. So I think when we went into this as a hypothesis, we thought that patients would be satisfied. We wondered actually whether patients would be more satisfied with the student present. From other studies where it has shown that patients consider having a student as a beneficial thing to occur because of that more comprehensive assessment and having a second opinion. So we actually wondered whether maybe we'd get an actual increase in satisfaction. We thought the time probably would be about the same from some of the other studies and from our own personal experiences of taking students. But obviously we needed to find a bit more evidence than just our own personal anecdotal evidence.
Well, and each of those variables that you just mentioned could be measured a number of different ways, right? There's not only the time in the consultation, but the time that might be spent with the student outside of the consultation, and the time that the patient might be kept waiting, and obviously satisfaction and some other things you've already mentioned. Can you give our listeners a bit of a sense as to how you operationalize these important concepts?
Yeah, so we asked both the patients and the GPs about time. So in the patient questionnaires, we asked them their waiting time, and we grouped it into time slots rather than having a categorical time. So we, you know, had less than 15 minutes, 15 to 30 minutes, etc., for the patient waiting time. So that was obviously a self-assessment, and there are potentially some inaccuracies of that patient's recording of that time. However, there was no difference between the two groups, and having over 400 patient questionnaires in between the two groups, there was no difference. So I think that we don't need to be too concerned about that inaccuracy. And then from the GP's perspective, we also asked them to allocate a time frame. Once again, we gave them time frames rather than allocating a single time, which may have been not ideal in hindsight, but at the time we thought it matched in with how consultations are billed in Australia, with Medicare sort of item numbers, as we call it. So that's kind of where that came from. We then also found out whether patients had seen the student alone or whether the student had seen the patient alone prior to the consultation with the GP. And we only found a small number of consultations were actually in this group. And I think, if I remember correctly, it's about 11% of the consultations were a parallel style of consultation where the patient saw the student alone prior to the consult. So we didn't actually measure that length of that part of the consultation.
I should ask you to clarify, you've been referring to the two groups, one group of consultations where the student was present and one group that they weren't. Am I right in saying that the various participants were surveyed after a sequence of consultations and then you divided after the fact those that had students versus those who didn't, or was it more prospective?
We had asked the GPs to allocate in each week of the time of the study, so it went over 4 weeks for each GP, and they had to allocate one session, which is either a half day in general practice, either the morning or afternoon session, for the consultations with the student present, and then we asked them to allocate another 5 consultations during a particular session when the student was not at the practice. At the University of Queensland general practice rotation, the students spend, on average, 4 sessions per week at a practice, so there was opportunity for the GP to choose when the student was present and also an opportunity to choose when the student was not present at the practice. So we wanted to kind of have them quite separate, particularly for assessment of time, wanted to see if there was a difference, so that it wasn't within the one session having consultations with or without a student present. They were actually separate days.
Right, but it's the strength of the study, if I've understood correctly, that the same GPs and the same practices were represented in both groups then.
That's right. So we wanted to try to make it have that strength. Obviously, the patients in each of those groups were not the same, though. So that's, I guess, a little bit of a limitation. But I don't think there was any way of being able to do that, to have the patient present for both sets of consultations.
Right. And you've already alluded to the findings in terms of the two sets of consultations being quite similar with respect to time in waiting room and satisfaction and so on. One of the potentially distressing bits was the willingness of the GP to raise sensitive or personal issues. Do you mind speaking to that a little bit and telling us your thoughts on how big a problem it could be or whether or not there are ways to alleviate the concern?
Yeah, so that was certainly a finding that we found and has been found in other studies as well. So what we found was that a significant number of patients, when the medical student was not present, raised a sensitive or personal issue compared to when with a medical student present, and that was statistically significant difference. What this certainly raises for us is that one of two things occurs here. Either the patient, when the student is at the practice, declines to see the medical student, and so therefore they go ahead with their consultation with the GP, but no medical student attends. Or the other, which I guess we don't know from our study which of these is the more likely or what proportion is this. The other side, though, is that does the patient actually choose not to raise that intimate or personal issue at this particular consultation when the student is present? So they may consent to have the student, but then feel that they can't raise that issue. And so I think that's an area that possibly needs a little bit more fleshing out in further research. And I think we as educators and GPs need to understand that this might occur and that we need to be able to address that. Either we provide the students with training at other opportunities on these issues so they don't miss out on the important learnings that go along with dealing with patients with personal or sensitive issues.
Yeah, and I highlight that largely because it's something that's worth paying attention to, but you know, do want to reinforce it. It seemed to be one of very few results that showed a difference, whereas the general trend was toward the two sets of consultations being very comparable.
Absolutely, yeah. It was something that we had wondered in our hypothesis whether we would find a similar outcome given that it had been found in other studies. And so I think it is really important that we're aware of it and that our GPs are aware of it as well, that patients may choose not to raise these issues, which is not an ideal situation from a patient perspective if that's the reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, my next question, I might be asking you to speculate a bit because I'm not sure that your data speak to it, but I might be wrong there. But I'm curious as to the extent to which the general lack of difference in the two sets of consultations is dependent on the GP's experience level in terms of how much time and practice does it take to learn how to integrate students into one's practice before it becomes just part of one's common course of activity.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point, that all our GPs were quite experienced GPs, having had students for many years. So they were long-term GPs and long-term supervisors of medical students. So I think that that does probably lead to a little bit of bias in our results, in the sense that maybe less experienced GPs would have, if they had participated, the results may have been slightly different. And given that obviously the GPs consented to participate, perhaps those GPs who were less experienced may have felt less confident in being part of the study as well. So I think that that's an important part. And our study certainly doesn't give us any information on what length of experience you require to be able to meld the two, teaching and patient care, seamlessly or well, so that it doesn't impact on either patient or GP satisfaction. So yeah, don't really know the answer of how long it takes to be able to do that. And maybe that's another avenue for some further research.
Yeah, and it is just speculation as well. I wouldn't want to assume necessarily that it takes a lot of experience, but presuming that it is a skill that needs to be developed, does your experience in this domain lead you to give any particular advice to other GPs who might just be starting out in terms of how they can integrate students and see impacts as negligible as the ones that you've described in this paper?
I think from my own personal experience and from just speaking with other GPs, initially I'm sure that it would take a little bit of increased time and that you may need to allow a little bit longer for the consultations and to maybe space your consultations a little bit out as you build your confidence. But I think as GPs and doctors in general, you know, we're educators in a lot of what we do to our patients, you know, especially in general practice, we spend a lot of time educating our patients. And I think just learning that skill of incorporating that education to the patient and the student at the same time can enable you to cover a lot of that teaching that you need to do for both at the one time, rather than having it at separate times within the consultation. And whilst that takes a little bit of time to maybe develop those skills, I think a lot of GPs are good at educating patients, and so fitting students into that is not that difficult.
I was going to ask something else, but that actually is a very encouraging and positive note to end on. I think we'll leave it at that, and I'll just remind our listeners that I've been speaking with Rita Partanen, who's the acting head of the Rural Clinical School at the University of Queensland, about a paper that will be released in the February 2016 issue of Medical Education called Is 3 a Crowd? Impact of Medical Student Presence in the General Practice Consultation. Thanks, Rita, and best of luck with following up on this and with your various roles in Australia.
Great, thank you very much.